Good morning. Today's daf and getting nun ches. We're on nun zayin amud beis. We're at the very bottom of the amud, and this is the third day of Agadata. The Gemara here in the fifth parak of Gittin has covered a number of Agadatas, and it's honestly depressing, but that's fine. In other words, that's obviously the intent of the Gemara, and it's okay to be sad. It's more than okay to be sad. In other words, the Gemara already told us a couple of times that we have to properly be misabel al chorban beis hamikdash, and these Gemaras do the job. So. It's unfortunate that it's an appropriate time of year in which we're doing these Gemaras. We're in the middle of the 3 weeks. But that aside, so we're going to be doing Daf Nun Ches today, which is going to be day number three of the Agadata regarding Churban Beis HaMikdash. Half the Daf is going to be a completion of the Agadata, and then we're going to go back to our Mishnah, and we're going to resume, quote-unquote, regular programming. We're going to say Pshat in the Mishnah. We're going to go back to the Sikrikon. Let's start with the Gemara. We are now on the very bottom of Nun Zayin Amud Beis. The Gemara Amar Rabba Bar Brachana Amar Rav Yochanan Arba Im Sa'a Kitzutzei Tol Nimtzu Barosh Haruge Beitar. When you get to the top of Beitar and the Haruge Beitar. So remember there were three destructions that we described at the beginning of the Agadata. As far as the Churban Beis HaMikdash, Turei Malka was destroyed, and Beitar. So as I already pointed out, the number one and three historically I can point to, right? Number two, I historically do not know where it took place, but regardless, Beitar took place in about the year 130, 135. A revolution, a revolt from the Jews against the Romans, and Hadrian and the Romans decimated the Jewish people. And so over here we're getting pictures of what Haruge Beitar looked like. So the Gemara now describes that there were Kitzutzei tefillin. Kitzutzei are what you and I call the bottom, right? In other words, just the tefillin without the straps. So it was found. So how many? So we have a tradition that Arba Imsa. Arba Imsa is obviously a large volume of tefillin. 40 saw make up a mikvah, okay, right? The base minimum for a kosher mikvah gives us a sense of what we're talking about. Rabbi Yanam, Rabbi Shmuel Amar, Shalosh Kupo, Shal Arba Im Arba Imsela, B'mas Nisa Tana Arba Im Kupa, Shel shalosh sa'in. We have a discrepancy over here in terms of how many kupas are we talking about. The discrepancy is basically either 40 or 120. So v'lo pligi, but the Gemara says, but it's really not a discrepancy. It's just describing two different tefillin. So habadereisha habadedara. We're talking of the difference of tefillin shel rosh and tefillin shel yad. And Rashi makes the following comment, and it's going to be a little bit difficult for us to visualize because we have a pretty good picture of what tefillin are, more than a pretty good picture, but from your and my perspective, the tefillin shel rosh and tefillin shel yad are exactly the same size. It just happens to be that the tefillin shel yad is one compartment where the dalet parshiyos are written in one cloth and put into the tefillin shel yad. Masha'in kein tefillin shel rosh, four compartments, four different boxes, but those boxes obviously are significantly smaller, and the four parshiyos are written on four different klapim and inserted into each one of the compartments of the Tefillin Shel Rosh. Rashi describes over here that back in the day, the Tefillin Shel Rosh was significantly larger than the Tefillin Shel Yad, because what you had to do with the Tefillin Shel Rosh is make four different compartments. So they don't have the kind of precision that we have nowadays, right? Tefillin, I know it's a mitzvah of the Torah, what's changed in the last 3,300 years, but tefillin has changed a lot in the last 3,300 years. The precision in which we make the tefillin, the size of the tefillin, in other words, it's gone through a lot of change. You see a pair of tefillin from an older generation, right? They're tiny, right? And the actual batim themselves were paper thin, obviously still made from hide, but in other words, but they were much thinner. Nowadays we have gasos, we have the thick hide that we use for a tefillin. Anyway, it's gone through a lot of change. So back in the day, and Rashi over here describes, now I'm not sure if Rashi is describing the tefillin that existed in his day, but regardless, it doesn't matter. In other words, we're right now just saying pshat in the Gemara, in the Gemara itself. So the tefillin shel rosh was four different boxes, and so four times bigger, not exactly, but you understand, four times bigger than the tefillin shel yad, which was only one box with the dalet parshiyos. So the Gemara says, so that explains the discrepancy in between the size of the boxes, not to be lost on all of us. It's just the basic idea that that was a lot of tefillin that was recovered from Beitar, because Rachmanis, there were a lot of people that were killed in Beitar. That's the point of the Gemara. Amar Rabbi Yossi Arba Kabin Moch Nimsu Alevin Achas Ula Amar Tisha Kabin. Okay, and brain matter was found, again, a discrepancy of either 4 or 9 kabin of brain matter. Again, a graphic description of how many were killed. Amar Rav Kahana Vitema Shila Bar Maria Maikra Bas Babela Shiduda Ashrei Shishalim Lach. Pasuk in Tehillim Kuf Lamed Zayin Ashrei Shiyochas V'Nipes Es Olech Al Sela Al Hasela. So the pasuk in Tehillim gives also this kind of graphic description. B'nei Tzion Ha'ikar Ma'Misulam B'Paz, the pasuk in Eicha, this is the fourth parak of Eicha, Ma'Misulaim B'Paz. So the in other words, somehow they were praised by the gold. So now it says the pasuk reads carefully, Ha'Misulaim B'Paz. Now, presumably, what it should say is Hamasulaim Mipaz. Ile Medava Mechave Bepiza. So the you want to tell me that the pshat is the that basically what they did is that they used gold to demonstrate and show their wealth. So Vamri Debe Rabbi Shila Tarte Metakli Yistari Piza Nachus Bahama. Right, two weights, two measurements of gold fill the world. One of it was Rome and the other was the rest of the world, meaning to say that Rome had a significant amount of gold and so therefore it was not as precious. So Elosh Ayu Megana Sapaz Biof Yam. So the basically they looked down at the Paz. In other words, they had things that were more precious and more flamboyant than the actual gold. So so meikarach and the Gemara is going to explain this in the upcoming meikarach hashiva derame having a kita bilyona de gushpanka. So umisham shiar sayhu. So originally, what the Romans would do, right? The hashiva derame, the dignitaries of Rome, right? I say dignitaries, nothing dignified about it. But what they would do is have a kita bilyona de gushpanka. So they would take the they would take this mint, these minted coins, and or whatever, some sort of imprinted art, and they would put it over their beds. And when they would have relations, they would be looking at these images. And the idea would be is that the looking at beautiful images while engaged in intimacy would result in beautiful children. That's the that's the thought process. Mikan ve'elech. So ma'is ben Yisrova asri bekarai depurayu or mishamshe. But then what they would do is they would replace it with Jewish people. In other words, beautiful Jewish people. So literally, I'm just translating the Gemara literally. It's really hard to read and translate, but they would tie the Jewish people to the beds, and as opposed to the beautiful images, they would have the Jews tied to the bed while they were engaged in Tashmish. So now one Jew asked another Jew, where do we find this in the Torah? Meaning this kind of embarrassment and in this kind of degradation. Meaning, it's not part of the Tochacha. You don't see it in the Tochacha. Now, there are awful things mentioned in the Tochacha, but this is not one of them. So, Amarle Gam Kol Chaliv V'Chol Makar Shelo Kasu B'Sefer HaTorah Zos. So, he says it is in the Tochacha. In other words, look at the very end of the Tochacha. This is the second Tochacha of the Torah. So, you look at the end of it. This is already Pasuk Samach Aleph of Perek Chav Ches. So, it says that basically, and more, right? And there's going to be more, right? In other words, the Torah in the second Tochacha says, I'm not even writing everything that's going to happen, more is going to happen. And our Gemara, we got a very brief description of what that more would look like, or what it did look like. This is a really funny exchange over here in the Gemara, funny meaning strange. And he says, oh, in other words, I'm reading the Tochacha, I didn't get there yet. How much more do I have to go? So Amar Lei Ingid Pusta Upaga. So Ingid, you're almost there. Pusta Upaga, you're a column and a half away from it. In other words, you open up a Sefer Torah and you look at the Tochacha, the second Tochacha, and Stu's going to know this. I'm not going to know this. How many columns of the Torah does it fill up? So more than one. So anyway, so he says you're a column and a half away from that pasuk. Again, that pasuk's at the end of the Tochacha. So you're a column and a half away. Amar lei I mate legabe. And he says to him, well, if you just gave me a little more time, so lo etzirichin lech, I would have gone to the pasuk and I wouldn't have need your answer. Okay, really strange exchange over here. Okay, I'm not sure what what the Gemara is trying to inform us with that. We continue. I'm Rav Yehuda Amashmol Mishum Rav Shimon Ben Gamliel my dechsev. Eini olala lenafshi mikol benos iri. This is the third parak of Eicha. So arba meos bati kinesis hayu bekrach beitar. There were 400 schools in Beitar v'chol achav achad. Hayu ba arba meos malam de tinokas. 400 students in every one of the schools v'chol echav achad. Hayu lefanav arba. I'm sorry. 400 rebbeim in that school and v'chol achav achad. Hayu lefanav arba meos tinokas shal beis rabba. And each one of them had 400 students. Okay, so 400 times 400 times 400. Anyway, lots and lots. So in other words, whenever you see the numbers 300 or 400, so basically they are, it could be understood as a guzman. In other words, they're just simply ways of communicating there were a lot. So kishayu all yev nichtan sosham doker nosam b'chol treihem. And when the enemies came into Beitar, so what they would do is they would hit. Ukishe gavar ha'oyev. So, I'm sorry, the kids would hit the Romans. But then finally, in other words, it was a back and forth in the revolution. In other words, in the revolt against the Romans, so there were times where the Jews were winning the battle. But then when the Romans overpowered, so what they did is they wrapped up the children in the Sifrei Torah. They lit it on fire. They burnt the children with the Sifrei Torah. Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya went to the big city in Rome. Amrlo tinok echad yesh bebeis ha'aser miyafeinayim v'tov roi ukvotzosav suduros lo taltalim. So there happens to be a beautiful child who is taken captive. So halach amar apesach beis ha'aserim amar minasan l'meshisa Yaakov Yisrael lebozizim. And so now, Rabbi Yeshua asks a question. He uses the pasuk to ask the question. The pasuk in Yeshayahu. So, Mina Salam Mishisa Yaakov Yisrael Lebozizim. Who allowed the Jews to be captured and plundered? Ano, so Tidak Va'amar, Halo Hashem Zu Chatanu Lo. And so, Velo Avu B'Durachav Haloch, Velo Shama B'Sarasso. So the child answered, he said, it's because of us, meaning because of our Chatayim. Noteworthy that that what the child did is really, he just quoted the second half of the pasuk. Meaning, he answered the question, but the answer to the question is actually contained in the pasuk itself. So, I'm gonna say this as if, it's not relevant to me. It's no big deal that he just quoted the second half of the pasuk. Now, for me, it is a big deal because this is a pasuk in Yeshayahu, and unfortunately, I'm not versed. So all he did was quoted the second half of the pasuk, but still, even from the Gemara's perspective, it's impressive. So Amar Muftachani Bo Shemar HaRabbi Yisrael. So once Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya heard that this child was able to, to properly answer the question, so he says he's going to be a Mora HaRabbi, he's going to be a postik. Havodah Shein Yizaz Mikan Asha Padena Mechol B'chol Mamashe Poskin Alav. So he says, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to redeem him, and it doesn't matter how much money it's going to be. Amr lo zaz b'shama shepadu b'mam manharbi v'lo hayu yamim mu'atim ad shahora horabi Yisrael umani Rabbi Shema ben Elisha. Okay, so he redeemed him. It took a lot of money to redeem him. And in fact, he did become a big posek amongst the Jewish people. Excuse me. Tosos points out here on the very top of the Amud that you don't have to go that far back in our Masechta. We learned back in the fourth parak that one of the takanas that were made, that when you redeem somebody, so you cannot redeem over value, over market value. And over here, we are redeeming over market value. Tosfos on the very top. So Tosfos over here offers two suggestions in terms of why it is that Rabbi Yehoshua, Rabbi Yehoshua was ready to well overpay for the release and the redemption of Rishma ben Elisha. Number one, Tosa says, is that we could be talking about Katala. In other words, it wasn't just I kidnap and I'm ransoming and it's a monetary exchange. If it's that, then you can only pay up to market value. You can't pay above. But over here, it's a kind of stafasha, so you can pay more. That's number one. Number two, says Tosos, that maybe an exception can be made for a chachma b'muflag. Someone who's an exceptional talmid chacham, an exception can be made for such an individual. Anyway, those are the two suggestions of Tosos. Obviously, much more to discuss. We're going to go on. We're doing the daf. I'm Rav Yehuda, I'm Rav Maisa Bivno, Bito Shel Rabbi Shema Ben Elisha, Shenishbu L'Shnei Adonim. So the Gemara here describes that there was an episode with the son and daughter of Rabbi Shema Ben Elisha, right? Shenishbu L'Shnei Adonim. They were taken into captivity, right? Just in other words, if you're watching the Gemara and the sequence of the Gemara is over here, meaning there really is rarely a happy ending to any of these stories. Meaning Yishmael ben Elisha was just redeemed. So in other words, his life was saved. And now we're talking about his children who are taken into captivity and are going to have a terrible ending. So in other words, in all these stories, there's no happy ending. There's no, and they lived happily ever after. That doesn't exist in this time period. In real life, it's fairy tale. But in other words, but over here, it's really just one tragedy to another tragedy. So I'm Rav Yehuda, I'm Rav Maisa Bibno, Bito Shel Rabbi Shema Ben Elisha. So the following episode regarding the children of Rabbi Shema Ben Elisha, an important detail over here, Rabbi Shema Ben Elisha. So he was a Kohen. He ended up serving as Kohen Gadol. So Shenishbu L'Shnei Adonim, so they were taken into captivity, and they were both enslaved, two different masters. So each one bragging about how beautiful their slave is. Well, they figured, okay, so let us breed these two. In other words, it's their slaves, and these are the children, son and daughter of Rabbi Yishmael ben Elisha. So unechalek bevlados, and what we'll do is we'll breed them, and we'll and any of the children that come out, we'll go 50-50 on the children. He ichnis on lecheder ze yashu bekeren zavizeh veze yishu bekeren zavizeh ze omer ani kohen ben kohanim gedolim. So isha shiv chazos omeris. So ani kohen is bas kohen is gedolim and asei leeved. I skipped a couple words. Omer ani kohen ben kohanim gedolim esa shivcha. And each one basically saying, I can't do this. In other words, he says, I'm a Kohen, the son of a Kohen. She says, I'm a Kohen, is the son of a Kohen, the daughter of a Kohen. And we're not allowed to engage in relations with an Eved or a Shivcha. Each one of them says respectively. And it's apparent in the story, by the way, that they didn't recognize one another. It could be that it was night, the lights weren't on, whatever the case was.
It was dark.
Let's assume it was dark. They didn't recognize. Uvachu kol alayla. Kev inshallah amud ha-shachar, hikiru zeh adzeh, v'naflu zeh al zeh, v'gau bebechia ad, shiyatz'ah nishmasam. Next morning when they recognized one another, realized who each other was, so they cried and they cried, and it was such a painful cry that that the neshamas exited. V'aleim konim yirmiyahu, and pshat in the pasuk in Eicha, Al elani bochia eini eni yorda mayim, and so when you get to the pasuk of the first parak of Eicha, so the Gemara says that you should be thinking about this particular story when you get to that pasuk. Am Reish Lakish Maisa b'Yishachas v'Tzafnas Bas Peniel Shema. Reish Lakish tells the following story during the time of the Chorban. There was a woman; her name was Tzafnas Bas Peniel. Tzafnas she called Tzofin b'Yofia, so Tzafia because everyone looks at her; she's so beautiful. And Bas Paniel, Bitosha Kohen Gadol, Shishimish Lafnev Velifnim. She was the daughter of a Kohen Gadol. The word Paniel, the one who turns to God. In other words, the one who has the close encounter with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, obviously, a description of the Kohen Gadol. Shinisala Ba Shabai Kola Laila. She was taken into captivity. And she was raped the entire night. Lamachar Hil Bisha Shiva Chalukim. So now her captor dressed her in seven layers of clothing. After having violated her, he then is going to the next day go sell her as a slave. Happens to be that there was a potential buyer and very unattractive man. And he demanded this potential buyer that he wants to see how beautiful she is. In other words, he basically wanted to see her unclothed. Now, the seller says, no, right, I'm not going to do that. You're going to have to go on my word. So, the potential buyer said, so I still want to see it. I still want to see her. So, hifshita. So they took off the 7 layers of the clothing. The first 6 they took off, shisha chalukim, ushvi karata. And the 7th one was torn off, nifleisha be'efer. And then what she did, she rolled around in the dirt, v'amra lafan of ribono sholam, im aleinu lochasta, akadusha shimcha hagibor lama lo sachos. And she cries out to Kadosh Baruch Hu, look, you're not going to have rachmanas on us, okay, but you at least have rachmanas on your name. So Allah koning Yirmiyahu bas ami chugisak vihispal shi ba'ifer. So evil yachid asilach mispatam rim ki pisom yavo shodeid aleinu. So when you get this pasuk in Yirmiyahu, right? So this is the 6th parak of Yirmiyahu. So you should be thinking about this story that we just did. Alaych lo nemer ela aleinu kebayochel alay v'alaych ba hashodeid. And when you see the word aleinu, so you're medayik. In other words, the pasuk does not say alayich, but rather aleinu on us. Right? Who's she talking about? Us. She's talking about me and a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Meaning that not only is there a bizayon for me personally, but I represent a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and so there's a bizayon to a Kadosh Baruch Hu as well. Amar v'yiramarav ma'idich zivashku gever veso v'ish v'nachlaso. So here we turn to a pasuk in Micha, 2nd parak of Micha. So, ashku gevru veso v'ish v'nachlaso. Ashku, to be ma'ashek, means basically to exploit. And the Gemara is going to here talk about the exploitation. Ma'isa ba'adamecha shenasan enav b'eshes rabo v'shulya denagre hava. So, there was a person who looked at his teacher's wife and was extraordinarily interested in her. And the Gemara also tells us, by the way, we say teacher over here, we really mean that it was master apprentice. In other words, he was learning to be a carpenter anyway, so he had a master carpenter, and he was the apprentice, and he took a liking to his master's wife. So now at one point in time, for whatever reason, so his teacher needed a loan. He needed to borrow money. So Amrulo Shager Ishtachat Sliva Alvenu. So the student says, okay, so send me your wife and I'll lend her the money. So I'll give her the money to send to you. So Shigir Shalvisha Ima Shlosh Yamim. So now, when the master sent his wife over to the student, so she stayed by the student for 3 consecutive days. After 3 days, he goes to collect his wife. Amarlo Ani Patartila Alter. So the student makes up a story, and the student says, well, it's funny. She came, I gave her the money, and I told her to leave, and she left right away. So, v'shamati she'atinokus nis'alu baba derech. But I did hear, however, that she basically was with other boys. So, in other words, so the student is now making up a story regarding his teacher's wife and basically accusing her of committing adultery. Okay. And most probably, she did commit adultery, but with the student. So, amalo ma'asa. So the teacher says to the student, so what do you think I should do? So Amrlo, the apprentice, says, "Imatasha me'leitzasi garsha." So he says, "Look, you're asking me. I'm telling you. I think what you should do is you should divorce her." So Amrlo, k'suvasa meruba. So he says, "So the master says I'd love to, but that's a big suva." So just as an interesting aside, it's not even an aside. In other words, if there is evidence of adultery, obviously we're talking about a forfeiture of the k'suva, and he wouldn't have to pay it. So over here, apparently, it was just rumors circulating and whatever. There is a discussion to be had in terms of when exactly those rumors are going to result in a forfeiture of the ksuva. But regardless. So Amrlo ani alvech v'tein la ksuva sa. So the apprentice says, so what I'll do is the following. I'll lend you the money so you could pay your ksuva. So Amad zevigirsha. So halachu v'nasa. So now the master now borrowed a significant amount of money, fully indebted now to his student. And then what the student did is the student married the wife. In other words, now she's the ex-wife. And it was perfectly within his right to marry her. But obviously, all this was built on lies and fabrications and falsifications. Now, the master did not have the means in order to pay back the loan. So the student said to the master, okay, no problem at all. You'll work for me. You'll work for me, you'll serve me, and that's the way you're going to pay back the loan. And the Gemara here gives us such a painful and sad image of the two of them, right? Student and now his new wife, and now her ex-husband serving them and tears rolling down his face, falling into the cup of wine. And it's at that point in time, Akash Baruch Hu said, okay, Gzar Din, that's it. In other words, signed and sealed that the Beis HaMikdash is going to be destroyed. Now, some say that it was Shtei Psilos B'Ner Echad. That's an expression. Basically means that both men were with her while she was married to the first one. In other words, in the second version, he was in fact Mezana with her during those 3 days. Meaning earlier, I suggested it. But now the Gemara does more than suggest it. Gemara says that that's in fact exactly what happened. Okay, and again, the Gemara is using these anecdotes in order to show it's a snapshot in terms of the level of low of debasedness that they arrived at, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, okay, that's enough. Okay, we're going to go back to our Mishnah. Adkan, that takes us to the end of the Agadita. We are now towards the bottom of Nun Ches Amud Aleph, and now, okay, we're leaving the world of Agadita. This is a good time to pause. We're not stopping, but now we're going to go all the way back to our Mishnah, and let us do a quick review of the Dinim of Sikrikon during Roman persecution. If you remember the Gemara that we did all the way back on Nun Hei Amud Beis, so there were really three historical periods of persecution. One, where by law a Roman was supposed to kill a Jew. Two, is that you're allowed to kill a Jew, licensed to kill a Jew, you just have to pay money, and then finally it became unlawful, illegal to go ahead and to kill a Jew. But obviously during periods 1 and 2, so your life was on the line. So you had a Sikrikon, so a Roman warrior coming and basically coming to you, and so what are you going to do? You're going to try your best to bribe your way out of it. And so what you're going to do is you're going to give over your land as bribery so that you won't be killed. Now, the Gemara pointed out during periods 1 and 2, so that was a Kenyan Gomer. All right, terrible, but in other words, you were Gomer Umakne. You certainly understood that it's either going to be your property or your life, and so therefore you gave him your life in exchange. You gave him your property in exchange for your life. However, during that third period of time where it was illegal and unlawful to go ahead and have the Roman kill you, so what you would do is that you would give over your land, but, in other words, you are not making a Kenyan. And hopefully with the hope and expectation that you're going to get back the land at a later point in time. So what did we learn in the Mishnah? The Din Sikrikon. So the Meharuge Milchama Ve'elech. I'm going back to the Mishnah. I'm just reviewing. From Haruge Milchama going forward, so there is a Din Sikrikon. So now the following legislation, and it goes like this. So there needs to be a correct order of operations. If you are an interested buyer of that property, again, it's owned by, there's an original owner who still is the original owner. There's a Sikrikon who right now is the current occupier of it. So the correct order is the following. First negotiate with the true owner and then negotiate with the Sikrikon. Because otherwise, you're not really negotiating with the right owner, with the real owner. If, on the other hand, you negotiate first with the Sikrikon, and then only afterwards you go to the true owner, so that is not a correct negotiation, because you didn't really start with the true owner. That's what we learned in the Mishnah. In fact, if you first went to the Sikrikon, and then afterwards you went to the Baal HaBayis, mecho bato. So it is not a successful transaction. You did not properly purchase the land. And by the way, the Gemara says the same thing is true regarding Ish V'Isha. In other words, if there is a land that's owned by the woman but currently controlled by the husband. Let's say, for example, that the land is securing her ksuva, which means that really the land now is hers. She has a lien on that land. So if you want to go ahead and you want to buy that property, you first have to go to her and then you have to go to the husband. Okay? That's what we learned back in the Mishnah. Okay, now there's more to come in terms of the Mishnah, but for now, that's enough for us to have reviewed the Mishnah, and now let's do the Gemara. Lakach min asikrikon amarav. So we're the very last two lines of Nun Ches Amar Aleph. Amar Rav Lo Shanu Ela Damar Lo Lechazeku Kni. Aval Bishtar Kana. Now, Rav is commenting on the din of the Mishnah, where I first went to the Sikrikon and afterwards I went to the Balabais. Okay. And the Mishnah tells us, Mekcho Batel. Rav says, okay, that's true, but I want to put in a qualifier. That's only going to be true if the original owner, where he now was asked second, that's where he said, go ahead, Lech Chazek Ukni, right? Knock yourself out. So in other words, when he says something like knock yourself out, what he really is saying is that I still believe the land is mine. And you now, the interested buyer, are not going to make a kinyan on that land. However, says Rav, if what he does is that he writes a bishtar, in other words, even though you went to the true owner and you went to him second in line, you first negotiated with the Sikrikon, and then afterwards you went to the Marakama, to the original owner. But the original owner doesn't just simply say, knock yourself out. But he actually writes a shtar, now making the land yours. So Rav says, under those circumstances, now you've made a kinyan. Even though you went about it, quote unquote, in the wrong order, nevertheless, by him writing a shtar to you, so that is a Gemiras Das that shows us that he is in agreement that this land is going to be sold to you. Shmuel Amar Af Bishtar Namelokani Achiyichtov Lo Achrayus. Now Shmuel says no, not yet. In other words, just because the original owner wrote you a shtar, that's not enough proof that he's really selling it to you Belev Shalem. How do I know, according to Shmuel, that he sold it to you Belev Shalem? Not only when he writes you a contract, but with Achrayus, offering personal responsibility in the event that anybody goes in and takes that land away from you. In other words, back in the day, so a sale was done with insurances that if let's say a creditor comes and takes the land away from you, I'm going to reimburse you. Okay. So that was back in the day, title insurance, if you will. And so, but the title insurance was done by the seller himself. Shmuel says, then and only then do I really have the confidence that the original owner is selling the land. Tanya Kavasi, the Shmuel is now we are on the very top of Nuches Amid Beis. A Bryce is supporting this din of Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel ben Elazar Omer, Lakach min Eish v'chazar, V'lakach min Eish mecho kaya, min Eish v'chazar, V'lakach min Eisha mecho bato, ad shetichtov lo, achrayus. So over here in the Braisa, we're talking about buying a land from the husband again. This land is securing her ksuva. So it's really her land. And meanwhile, so what is the proper order of negotiation? We know. We learned the Mishnah. First you go to her, then you go to the husband. However, if you go to the husband, then went to her, you went out of order. You were out of order. So now so is there a way to ameliorate? Yes. The Braisa says that if you went to him and you went to her second, even though you were out of order, but if she writes you a sale contract and she writes achrayus on the sale contract, now you know that she co-signed on the sale and now the sale is complete. And in the braisa, what does it say? That she sold it by achrayus. So this is supporting Shmuel. So name it to have it you have to the Rav. So now the Gemara says, okay, the braisa is against Rav, right? So I'm lecha Rav, my achrayus na mishtar. So Rav says, no. You know what we meant by? We meant by a chrayus. We meant by a chrayus shtar. A chrayus could just simply be a description of the contract. That's not the simple pshat of the braisa. We understand. But in other words, but to defend Rav, you could just simply say that the braisa was lav davka. I mean, it's funny. The Gemara could have also said that Rav tanu palik, meaning, okay, a braisa is against Rav, but Rav can argue against the braisa. But if Rav can somehow reinterpret the braisa, he'll do so, and that's how he'll do so over here. Okay, I think, yeah, let's start this tomorrow. All right, we're going to get involved in Cheskas Gimel Shanim. We're going to go to Baba Basra. We're going to go to the third Perek. It's just going to require a little bit of an introduction. Okay, let me pause over here. We covered a lot of Gemara today, a lot. Okay, so let's quickly recap the first half of today's afternoon Chesamad Aleph. So it takes us through the Agadata, third day of the Masechta, right? Nun Vav, Nun Zayin, Nun Ches, right? Rachmanis, all various stories, both macro and micro, regarding Churban Beis Hamikdash, specifically Churban Beis Sheni. And so we finished that up today. It covered the entirety of the Amud Aleph of today's daf. We went back to the topic of Sikrikon. Land was taken away by Romans and unlawfully, and now you are a potential buyer and you want to buy that land. So what do you need to do? So we already learned in the Mishnah, and we went over the halach in more detail, that you have to go about in the right order, where you have to first go to the Marakama, negotiate with him, have him agree to the sale, then and only then can you negotiate with the Sikrikon, who is not the true owner. That's the right order of operations. However, if I reversed it, so the sale is not going to be a valid sale, and what we spent time doing today on the Amud Beis is, even though he went out of order, is there an indication that the Marakama really is in fact agreeing to the sale? The answer is yes, he has to write a contract. Does that contract have to include Achrayus? That's a machlokus between Rav and Shmuel. And the Gemara said the Braisa does resoundly seem to support Shmuel.